The movie you are about to see is based on actual medical cases. Construction is underway at Denver Pediatric Hospital. Veronica Hamill. A man works with a jackhammer. Pam Dauber. A child's cry for help. Daniel Hugh Kelly. Lisa Jacob. A bulldozer scoops up a large pile of dirt and concrete. Cynthia Martels. Daniel Benzali. James Pickens Jr. A woman with long hair is in a gray car. Peering through sunglasses, she sees a sign that reads, "Sorry for the inconvenience. Please use emergency entrance." Inside, a brown-haired woman is talking with another woman behind a counter. The long-haired woman sees a boy lying down and sweating.
"I don't have a private physician. I'm new in town. Look, my son is in terrible pain. He needs to be examined right now.
The doctors are all busy right now. Why don't you fill out this form while you're waiting?"
"Why can't I fill this out while a doctor is examining my son?"
"I have no available doctor, ma'am."
"Hi, handsome.
This is an emergency."
"I'm sorry, but they're all emergencies."
She sees the woman attending to her son.
"Excuse me."
"It's okay, I'm a doctor. Has he vomited?"
"Oh, yes, about 3 hours ago. And his temperature's 104.
"Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you."
The long-haired woman goes to the woman behind the counter.
"Put him at the top of your list and get a doctor here."
"They're all busy."
"Unbusy them. Stat."
She turns to a doctor.
"Doctor! Thank you."
No problem. Somebody will be here in a minute."
"I'm Dr. Jefferson. What's going on?"
"You've got an acute abdomen here, doctor."
The long-haired woman leaves. Dr. Jefferson shakes his head.
I don't know."
She goes into an auditorium full of hospital staff. A curly-haired man is at the podium.
"Here she is now."
Everyone takes their seats as she mouths the word "sorry" to the curly-haired man.
"Now, I know you're all itching to get back to work, so let me introduce the physician with whom I had the pleasure of working during my tenure at UCLA Medical. She's a brilliant researcher and clinician who has published extensively in her field of fetal cardiomyopathy. And with her help and your support, we are going to bring this hospital into a future of innovative care and treatment. Ladies and gentlemen, the new chairperson of the Department of Medicine, Dr. Paula Spencer."
She smiles as she goes to the podium. She shakes hands with the curly-haired man.
"Thank you, Mr. Prescott, for that flattering introduction. Well, I certainly hope my tardiness doesn't suggest we're moving slowly into the future."
Elsewhere, Dr. Jefferson walks down a hallway as a man wearing a tool belt stands on a ladder. He sees the boy's mom and walks toward her.
"What is it?"
"Appendicitis. Dr. Winter's going to operate right away."
"You sure it's appendicitis?"
"Yes, he's a very good surgeon, Mrs. Shaw. Don't you worry."
He goes to a phone. Mrs. Shaw frowns. People are filing out of the auditorium. A bald man's talking with Dr. Spencer and Mr. Prescott.
"You know, of course, that Donald has ruffled more than a few feathers with your appointment. It is traditional here to elevate from within. Being chair is a position many of our staff had hoped to achieve."
"Well, Everett, they already have you as chief of medicine. They can't have too much of a good thing. You're superb in that role. Excuse us for a minute. Lots of people to meet."
"So, where do we stand, he and I? He's chief, I'm chairperson."
"Equal rank. The medical staff elected him, I appointed you."
"Uh-huh. So I'm walking on eggshells."
"Well, look, they don't all share Everett's opinion, and those who do will come around. I have faith in you."
"Excuse me. Dr. Spencer, Dr. Joan Cates."
"Joan, I'm happy to meet you."
In the auditorium, Dr. Jefferson walks toward a nurse.
"Alma." "So, what's the new chair like?"
"Judge for yourself. The brunette in the dark suit."
Dr. Spencer finishes visiting with Dr. Cates and Donald, then walks toward Dr. Jefferson.
"That's the new chair."
Alma nods, then leaves.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry about what happened downstairs. I didn't know who you were."
"Well, I'm sorry I was in such a hurry. How's your patient?"
"He's about to have his appendix removed."
"Your diagnosis?"
"No, actually, it's Dr. Warner's. He's the staff surgeon on call."
Soon after, with the sick boy.
"Any history of abdominal problems?"
Nope, nothing.
Has he been in the hospital for anything?
No, he's usually very healthy, except for the usual childhood infectious diseases.
Mumps.
Yeah, he's had mumps and chicken pox and the measles. Both kinds, rubella and rubeola.
Do you have a medical background?
Oh, no, it's by osmosis. My father was a physician.
Excuse me?
Dr. Warner? Hi, I'm Paula Spencer.
Ah, new medical chair. Sorry I couldn't make your formal introduction. Welcome to Denver.
Thanks. Could we talk?
Sure.
They step away from the boy who is on a stretcher and his mother.
You know something I don't know?
That's what I was going to ask you. The boy has no rectus rigidity, no tenderness in his lower right quadrant, no rebound.
It's unusual, but not rare. He's got a high fever, high sed rate, white count over 30,000.
What's the rush to operate? Maybe a couple of hours wait and he'll settle into something else.
Or he'll perforate and really be in trouble. Look, Paul, may I call you Paul? You're a cardiologist. I'll defer to you on heart murmurs, but I've seen hundreds of appendicitis cases, so grant me the same deference. I make a keyhole incision, and I take a look. What's to lose? If I'm wrong, the kid ends up with a few stitches, and he's on his way. And Cal, by the way.
He goes back to his patient.
Wheel him in.
Wait, could you hold on just one moment?
She walks over to Paula.
Dr. Warner's right, Mrs. Shaw. If he waits, there's a risk of his appendix perforating.
You feel that way?
Paula nods.
All right. Though I have to be honest with you, I'm a little leery of surgeons, you know? When in doubt, cut it out.
Frequently apt, but in this case, I think Eric's in good hands. Well, you are going to feel better real soon.
Will it hurt?
No. You're going to be sound asleep. I'll come by and see you later.
She tweaks his nose, then leaves.
Remember, sweetheart, I'm going to be right with you. I'll be the first person you see after you wake up, I promise. You're going to be just fine. I love you.
Paula is leading doctors, including Dr. Jefferson and Alma, past a nursing station.
Kids are not small adults. They are a separate species of animal, physiologically and psychologically, and that it's essential their parents be involved in their diagnosis and treatment.
On the subject of diagnosis, what's your basic approach?
Bottom line, listen to the parents. Never overlook the obvious, and that'll account for about 90% of your diagnosis.
They go into a room where a young teenage patient's wearing headphones.
Hi.
Hello?
We're here to annoy you for a while.
If the hammering can't, then you can't.
Nurse?
The patient is Keith Summers.
No.
The patient is Peter Lively.
No, it says it should be.
Keith's 6 years old. They got everything mixed up and they moved him over to 322 and me here from 317.
Who's they?
Painters.
Paula looks at Alma.
We'll see about this.
She leaves.
Well, fortunately, it was the beds and not the medication that got mixed up.
All right, watch it.
An unconscious boy's moved on a stretcher.
We're going to put him in four.
Excuse me, do you have any word on Eric Shaw, how he's doing?
I'm sorry, you'll have to wait for the doctor.
Paula walks up and smiles.
How are you holding up?
Good question. Typical hospital procedure. You know, nobody ever really tells you anything.
Let me see what I can find out.
Mrs. Shaw frowns as she watches Paula go talk with Dr. Warner in another room with large glass windows.
50 milligrams of Demerol for the pain. Call me if it gets worse. Excuse me. Boy, it's fine. His appendix is normal. A lot of swollen, distended intestine. Engorged vessels. No perforation. Could be viral.
So we could have waited.
Hey, the odds are 4-1. I go in and I find an infected appendix. Better safe than sorry, right?
Mrs. Shaw watches as Paula nods, then returns.
He's doing fine. His appendix wasn't infected.
Mrs. Shaw's smile fades.
You mean the surgery was unnecessary?
Everything pointed to appendicitis, Mrs. Shaw. Fortunately, that wasn't his problem.
Well, then what is?
That's what we're going to find out. He'll be in recovery for a couple of hours, and then you can see him.
Paula starts to leave.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to come up here and check on him personally.
Paula nods.
Thank you.
The women smile at each other as she leaves. Later, Paula is eating alone at the hospital cafeteria. Eric's mom approaches with a wrapped gift in her hand.
Excuse me, Dr. Spencer.
Hello, Mrs. Shaw.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to give you this.
Thank you, but that's not necessary. It's my job. I work for the hospital.
Please, it's nothing expensive. It's just a little token for being so nice.
Paula accepts the gift.
Please, sit down.
Oh, thank you. But just for a minute, Eric's coming out of recovery, and I have to be there for him.
She opens the present. It's a book with maps of Denver.
I heard that you just moved to Denver, and this is something that I found useful when I first moved here.
Thank you. I can definitely use it.
Good.
How long have you been here?
About a month.
Do you like it?
No, I don't know. I haven't met many people here. You know, it's a little more difficult when you're a single parent.
Yeah. Divorced?
Widowed. When Eric was 3.
She looks away as Paula nods a little.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Believe me, I remember. Never a meal without an emergency call.
I've got to go. If you'll excuse me. And, thank you. That was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
At a school, a girl sits alone as Paula approaches. The girl is wearing sunglasses, fingerless gloves, a nose ring, and part of her hair is painted different colors. She peers over her glasses at Paula.
Thanks, Amanda. I really needed this on my first day at work.
Later.
Dumping food on the head of another student is hardly a best foot forward in starting a new school.
She and her friends made fun of me the minute I walked into the school.
This isn't Los Angeles. We don't settle disputes with violence.
It was just a bowl of yogurt.
It was a violent act. Maybe if you'd modify your appearance, you'd be less subject to mocking. Another episode like this and you'll be suspended.
Shortly after, Paula and Amanda leave.
The whole point of moving here from L.A. was for both of us to start a clean slate,
Nobody's going to make fun of me and get away with it.
Mr. Binder's right. You make yourself a target.
You're the one who told me I could dress whatever way I wanted as long as I was neat and clean.
Yes, I did. But if it's going to cause you problems...
This does not cause problems. They cause problems. And I'll handle it.
Like today?
Don't worry about it, all right? Look, I'm not dumb enough to get myself thrown out of school.
That's comforting.
Paula walks off and Amanda glares after her. At the hospital, Eric's brought into recovery. Mrs. Shaw is there.
Easy.
Uh-huh.
I got the
rail.
Okay.
He grimaces.
Oh, could you wait a minute, please? I think he's just waking up.
Sure.
Honey? Eric? Open your eyes. Hi. Open your eyes. It's all over, sweetie. Didn't I tell you I'd be the first person you'd see? You're gonna be just fine.
Paula's car is parked in front of a house. Amanda picks up a framed photo of a man and young girl smiling. She gently touches the picture as she lies on her bed. Paula walks in, dressed up, but her hair is pulled up by hair clips. She sees her daughter looking at the picture and smiles slightly.
Well, what do you think of the outfit?
She turns.
For what?
For dinner.
Amanda sits up.
You're going out for dinner? It's our first night here.
I know, hon. I'm sorry, but it's business.
Who's taking you?
Nobody. It's business.
She takes the clips out of her hair.
Donald's picking me up in 20 minutes.
Oh, so he's taking you.
Donald and his wife are giving me a lift.
Amanda looks down, then at her mom again.
Daddy gave you that for your anniversary?
Does that mean I can't wear it again?
Amanda stares down again. Paula sighs and walks toward her daughter with a smile. She sits in front of her on the bed.
I miss him too, hon. Every minute of every day. But it's been 3 years.
Amanda doesn't look at her mom.
You know, we can't keep living our lives wondering how he would feel about every single choice we make.
She touches her daughter's hair, but she pulls away.
I'm gonna go get some dinner.
Paula frowns as Amanda leaves. Later, a string quartet plays as people mingle at an outdoor party. Paula is sitting alone on a bench holding a wine glass as Donald walks up. He's also carrying a drink.
Hiding?
Thinking.
Well, I hope about turning pediatrics into an A-level hospital.
Actually, about turning my daughter into an A-level human being.
What is it, the punk costume that's worrying you? At least she hasn't shaved her head.
I'm not that enlightened. No, the costume's just surface. Depends on her taste in music. 3 months ago it was Rastafarian, next month, who knows?
Teenage angst, I remember it well.
Me too.
She sips her wine and shakes her head.
But this is more.
If she needs counseling, I could recommend someone.
Thanks. But I've done that. You can't counsel someone who won't talk.
What won't she talk about?
Stan's death. She's been hostile since it happened.
With you?
With me, with everyone. She misses him terribly.
It's understandable, Paula. They spent a lot of time together.
Yeah. The perks of working out of the house. It seems writers are better homemakers than doctors. I just hope I made the right move bringing her here.
Well, I don't mean to diminish your concern, but I had the same one about bringing you here.
At night, hazard signs flash at the construction sites around the hospital. A nurse carries a tray as she walks through a darkened hallway. She passes some scaffolding. She passes a door marked stairs. A shadow moves and the doorknob slowly turns. The door opens and someone unseen enters the now empty hallway. From the person's vantage point, we walk slowly past patients' rooms. We stop behind the scaffolding as a nurse works at the nursing station. She leaves. We continue silently down the hallway, passing trays and a ladder. We enter room 512, where Eric is sleeping. We stare closely at the sleeping child, then look at his blood pressure monitor. With gloved hands, we take apart his IV. The screen goes black.
Morning.
Smiling, Eric's mom gets off an elevator. She walks past patients and medical staff. Paula is examining Eric, who is sweating.
Derek?
I'm sick, Mom.
What's wrong with him?
Let's go outside and talk, okay?
Dr. Warner stays with Eric as they go into the hall.
You said he was fine.
He was through surgery, but his temperature's gone up again.
From what? The surgery?
We're not sure yet. Post-surgical fever is not uncommon, but it could be from whatever brought him to us in the first place. We'll know more after the tests. Meanwhile, we've put him on antibiotics.
Will you be taking care of him?
Yes. I'm going to move him to the medical floor.
Thank you. Please, Fred, understand that Eric's my only child, and I just get so panicked whenever anything happens to him.
I know how that feels, Mrs. Shaw.
Please, call me Monica. Will you have one child, too?
Sometimes she feels like a crowd, but she's only one.
Wearing a candy striper uniform and carrying potted plants, Amanda gets off the elevator. She approaches Alma and the others at the nursing station.
Excuse me. Hi. I was supposed to deliver these.
Are the room numbers on them?
Yeah.
Then just go find the rooms.
Paula's walking down a hallway and goes into a laboratory. She approaches Dr. Joan Cates at a microscope.
Hi, I got your message. So, the boy's blood grew strep, ferritins, and candida.
That's what I'm looking at.
The surgery had no balance issues, so where would it come from?
Could be saliva.
You think?
Well, the same combination of pathogens is found there. But it could be a lab contamination of the sample, so I've ordered up another to take a look at.
Paula nods.
Good idea.
Joan frowns. Later with Dr. Jefferson.
Good workup, Alan.
You like?
I like. Get a GI console.
She goes to check on Eric and finds Monica pushing buttons on the IV monitor.
Mrs. Shaw?
Oh, the alarm went off and nobody came in, so I thought I'd slow it myself.
You shouldn't be touching that. It's the nurse's job.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope I haven't gotten anyone in trouble.
You haven't.
I think he's feeling better. Do you have a diagnosis?
We're still not sure.
Will you be doing more tests?
Not right now. He seems to be responding to the antibiotics, and getting him well is the priority.
I understand that one. That was my father's philosophy. Treat the patient, not the disease.
I have a feeling I'd like your father.
Alma goes into the nurse's station.
Why isn't someone monitoring Eric Shaw's ID?
We are.
Not recently. The alarm sounded. No one came in to adjust it.
We didn't hear any alarm. Maybe the apparatus is faulty. Or maybe this darn construction din is making us all deaf. I'll have it taken care of.
Thank you.
Paula turns to see her daughter.
Hi.
School's work for credit program.
Candy Striper.
Well, all they had left was either this, stacking books at the library, or bussing tables.
I thought you hated hospitals.
Well, obviously not as much as dirty dishes in libraries, huh?
Amanda steps closer to her mom.
Look, do me a favor, all right? I don't want people gushing all over me just because, you know, I'm your daughter.
Okay.
See ya.
Yeah.
Amanda hurries away. Paula rolls her eyes and watches. She looks up to see Alma staring at her.
She's 15.
Alma nods and Paula sighs as she leaves. Later, she's interviewing a woman in her office.
I worked for the Russells for 3 years, and I could have stayed on. Couldn't see myself moving back to England, living in all that damp weather and eating bangers and mash every day for lunch. Anyway, the two families I worked for before the Russells, they live here in town. You could call them.
Do you cook?
Nothing gourmet. Chicken and pasta. You're basic American.
I have a basic American daughter. Excuse me. Hello. Joan, just a minute. I'll check the references. If you're hired, how soon can you start?
I'd need 3 days.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She leaves and Paula returns to her phone call.
Joan? What's up?
She removes her glasses in Donald's office.
And cultures from the second sample verified it. The boy's blood contains two microbes that are commonly found in human saliva.
Donald glares at Paula.
How could this happen?
The question is, how does saliva accidentally end up in an IV system?
What are you saying? It was done on purpose?
Unless it came from the IV bag.
Oh, guys, you are really scaring me here. Contaminated saline solution?
Look, it's too late to check the one that fed Eric. It's long gone. I suggest we do some spot checking of our supplies.
Doctors, a one-word reminder. Lawsuit. So please, let's keep this to ourselves.
It's dark outside as Paula arrives home.
Hello?
Boxes are stacked in various rooms. She looks around.
Amanda? Anybody home?
Amanda is cutting salad greens as she listens to music on headphones. Paula raises her eyebrows. Her daughter moves to the music but doesn't see her mom. Licking her upper lip, Paula slowly walks up to Amanda and taps her on the shoulder.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, you gave me a heart attack.
Well, I'm sorry I couldn't holler any louder.
Oh,
I was not expecting this.
Oh, I just thought I'd get a jump on dinner. We are eating in, right?
Sounds good. What are we having besides salad?
Oh, I ordered pizza.
Okay. Is there any beer?
I think so.
Paula puts her briefcase and purse down, then gets a beer from the refrigerator.
So, how was your day in the hospital?
Oh, it was all right. It's kind of a war zone over there, isn't it?
Even without the hammering and blasting. I hired as the housekeeper.
Amanda freezes.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Her name is Cora. She's young. She's very attractive. Her references checked out. She's going to start in 3 days.
Oh, great.
Is there a problem?
No problem.
I thought you'd be delighted.
I am.
Doesn't sound like it.
I am, all right. I'm delighted.
She glares at her mom.
Can you make the salad dressing, please?
Paula rolls her eyes. Later, she's checking on Eric at the hospital. Monica is asleep in a nearby chair. Paula passes a blonde-haired boy in another bed who's playing a handheld video game. She smiles, then goes to Eric. She puts the back of her hand on his forehead, and he opens his eyes.
Hi. Can I have a drink?
Sure. Hi, sweetheart.
He's out of the woods.
I'm thirsty.
She reaches for a cup, but Monica beats her to it.
The room is different.
That's right. Dr. Spencer moved you here so she could take real good care of you.
She holds his head so he can take a drink of water.
Well, you slept a long time, honey. Mommy was right here with you.
It's night. Two nurses leave a room.
He's just the cutest kid. I hope he doesn't have any more nightmares. You check 331.
The first nurse leaves. The second nurse goes into 331. Without turning on a light, she checks on Eric and the blonde-haired boy. Both are asleep in their beds. The nurse leaves. Just as the door shuts, someone comes out of the bathroom. From that person's perspective, we walk over to the beds. We look from Eric to his roommate. We stare at the boy, then look at the IV line taped to his arm. The next morning, Dr. Jefferson takes a deep breath. As Monica changes Eric's shirt, Dr. Spencer listens to the blonde-haired boy's lungs with her stethoscope. The boy is sweating and taking sharp, deep breaths. She turns to Dr. Jefferson. Later, she's walking down a hallway with Joan. They both go into Donald's office where Everett is waiting.
Hi, come on. I filled Dr. Morris in on everything.
I would have expected to be informed from the beginning.
Well, there wasn't much to inform. A surgical patient spiked a post-op temperature.
Because of saliva contamination. I'd say that was worthy of discussion.
It seems so in hindsight, but we lacked a crystal ball.
He turns and scowls.
I'd say that having the same pathogens showing up in Bobby Wilson's blood rules out accident. Someone is doing this deliberately.
Easy, Paula. The last thing this hospital needs is a community panic over some psycho attacking sick children.
I agree. There must be some other explanation.
Like what?
The Wilson boy is sharing his room with Eric Shaw. Could he have picked up the infection from him?
Now, this is not a contagious disease.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Since both the surgical and medical floors have been compromised, whoever's doing this has the run of the hospital.
Well, that could be anyone. Visitors, staff, delivery people, I mean...
I think you better call the police.
If I call the police, Paula, it becomes public knowledge. The press will have a feeding frenzy with this.
You can't expect to keep this quiet.
Yes, I think we can, if we handle it ourselves. We'll tighten security.
With all the people going in and out of this building? The construction. You've got to stop that.
This hospital has binding contracts with the builders. We could be facing penalties, if not lawsuits.
Those lawsuits will be nothing compared to what you'll have to face if this kid dies in our care.
Okay, let's shut it down!
Inside, Paul is holding a conference with the hospital staff.
We've had two children come down with an unexplained infection. One on the fifth floor and one on the third. And until we're certain that it's not contagious, we're asking for increased precautions. Firstly, hospital renovations are temporarily halted. Patients are not allowed to enter other rooms. Visitors can only enter the rooms of patients they've come to see. No delivery people in any of the rooms. Also, we're asking the nursing staff to increase the frequency of their patient rounds to an hourly rotation.
In Eric's room.
Hey, I found it.
Chocolate. With chocolate chips?
Yeah. Shh. Sorry, I interrupted.
No problem.
Chocolate chips.
Paula is checking Bobby. Amanda comes into the room.
Hi, Bobby Wilson.
You're not supposed to be in here.
Mom, this is my job.
Amanda frowns and hurries out. Paula goes after her as Monica watches.
For you to room in with him.
Amanda. I'm sorry that I snapped at you. Alma, delivery people are not supposed to be in the rooms.
I didn't think that included our volunteers.
That includes everyone.
Alma frowns, then looks down at a chart.
From now on, leave the gifts at the nursing station, okay?
Amanda frowns and stares at the floor.
See you later.
She nods slightly. Paula leaves. Soon after, Paula tucks a blanket around Bobby, who is still sweating but sleeping. She touches his forehead, then pushes back a curtain to see Eric's bed.
How's he doing?
Better.
Oh, good. I feel so sorry for him. His mom hardly ever has a chance to visit because she works so much. But, fortunately for Eric, I don't have that problem. Mm.
He's a lucky boy.
Mm. You have a beautiful daughter. Oh, I heard her call you Mom.
Thank you.
You're lucky you have her working so close to you. My fondest childhood memories were of times I spent with my father. Though they were usually as his patient. But you know how busy doctoring can be. But they were great memories anyway.
Eric is coloring a picture.
So, Eric, what am I looking at?
The ocean?
Mm-hmm.
Sharks?
A little girl enters.
Yeah, I see that. That's good. What is this?
Space needle.
Of course. Dumb me.
What's your name?
Eric.
I'm Becky.
Hon? Honey, you're not supposed to come in here. Only the doctors and nurses and his mummy. Okay? Bye-bye.
She helps the girl from the room, then shuts the door. She smiles and takes her stethoscope from around her neck.
If Bobby's contagious, should Eric be in the same room with him?
We're not sure he is contagious, and if he is, Eric's already had it, so he can't get it again.
But if you don't know what's causing it, how can you be sure that Eric won't get it again? I mean, patients do have relapses.
True, but he's recovering nicely. And if he keeps it up, I think I can send him home in a day or two.
Hey, did you hear that? She said you can go home in a couple days. Isn't that great?
Amanda pushes a cart full of stuffed animals. She glances into Peter's room, where Dr. Jefferson is working with a syringe.
Is it burnt? A little.
Amanda starts breathing faster, and she hurries away. As she pushes the cart closer to the wall, she swallows several times and closes her eyes. Monica is walking down the hall carrying a styrofoam cup. She frowns when she sees Amanda close her eyes and lower her head.
You all right, sweetheart?
Yeah, I just got a little dizzy.
You're not sick.
No. I don't like needles, so.
Oh, I understand that one. Here, you come with me. Junie, a little sit down and a little sip of water and you're going to be just fine. Here, you sit right here.
She turns to a nurse.
Nora, do we have a cup of water, please?
Oh, sure.
Monica sits next to Amanda.
Now, you know, it's kind of hard to work in hospitals and avoid seeing needles. But I think you're pretty brave. Are you doing this to be closer to your mom?
I guess so. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
Does she know how you feel about needles?
Yeah.
Well, then, your working here must make her very proud of you.
She pats Amanda's back. That night at home...
I got it!
Amanda's hair is wrapped in a towel and she's wearing a t-shirt. Cora's at the front door.
Hello.
Hi. You must be Amanda.
I'm Cora.
Hello, Cora.
I know we're a bit late, I'm sorry. Things took longer to settle than I thought.
It's all right. This is my daughter, Amanda.
I have to go finish my hair.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
Amanda leaves.
Have you eaten?
No.
We have some leftovers from dinner, if you'd like.
Great.
Come along.
It's nice.
Thank you.
Paula is asleep. She awakens, turns on a lamp, then answers the phone.
Hello.
Eric is sweating again as a blanket is placed near his neck. A nurse, Dr. Jefferson, and Monica are frowning when Paula comes into the room.
You told me you couldn't get the infection again.
Get an orderly and move Bobby Wilson to a private room.
The nurse leaves.
Did you give him the phenobarb?
Not yet.
Do it. It's not the infection, Mrs. Shaw. It's either a relapse or something different.
A relapse of what? You can't even tell me what he had in the first place. This whole thing is crazy. I bring him in here because he has a stomachache. You operate and tell me he's going to be fine. Then he gets some unknown fever you can't explain, and you tell me he can't get it again. And now this. This is my child, doctor. And you call in more consultants, and you run more tests, but you tell me why he's sick.
Joan looks through a microscope.
John? Same pathogens?
Nope. Worse, I think.
Paula looks into the microscope.
This time it's not from saliva. You're looking at E. coli.
She stares at her.
His blood's been contaminated by fecal matter.
Joan nods. Later, Paula and Donald are sitting at a table in the cafeteria. Donald is rubbing his eyes.
It's different pathogens from two separate sources, so there's no doubt it's premeditated. It's not hospital-wide. It's related to Eric Shaw. Someone followed him from the fifth floor to the third floor.
If Eric's the target, how do you account for the Wilson boy getting infected?
I can't, except they shared a room. Maybe Bobby Wilson was made sick by mistake.
He puts his glasses on and rubs his forehead.
I'll call the police in the morning.
Now how do I tell Eric's mother someone's attacking her son?
They look at each other sadly. Later, Paula's walking through the medical ward. Her hands are in her lab coat pockets. She stops in the doorway in Eric's room where Monica is lying next to her son on the bed. Paula steps away and takes the stethoscope from around her neck. She puts the stethoscope in her pocket as she goes to the nurse's station.
Respiratory stat to the emergency room. Respiratory stat to the emergency room.
Is she still holding him?
Yes, she is.
I don't know where she gets the stamina. She must be with him at least 18 hours a day. She barely leaves to go home and change.
Paula sips some coffee as she stares downward.
She is always here.
She's one heck of a mom.
Paula's eyes widen as she looks at the nurse. She sets down her coffee mug as she quickly leaves the nursing station. She goes back to Eric's room. Monica is asleep next to Eric. Her arm rests on his chest. Paula stares at them with a frown. She returns to the nursing station.
Nurse, until Mrs. Shaw leaves for the night, I want you to monitor Eric every 15 minutes.
15?
Every 15 minutes in his room and check his condition. Chart his pulse rates and respirations. I want every single thing that goes on in that room to be on his record. If you need me, I'll be in the library.
The nurse watches her leave. She goes into the library and turns on a light. She searches shelves of books. She walks to another bookshelf and removes a book entitled Basics of Psychopathology. She gets several more books. The next day, nurses are talking outside as a truck backs up. Paula picks up a phone and dials. She takes a sip of something, then grimaces.
Yes, Massachusetts Psychiatric. I'd like to speak with the Dr. Richard Lowell.
Later, with a determined look, Paula walks down the hallway. She walks toward Alma at the nurse's station.
Is Mrs. Shaw still in the hospital?
She just went down to the cafeteria.
I want you to close Eric's door and post an isolation sign on it. I don't want anyone in there but staff.
For isolation, I need orders from Dr. Cates and Dr. Morris.
Do it now. I'll worry about who signs what later.
But it isn't hospital procedure.
Then I'm changing procedure, Alma.
And what about his mother? What do I tell her?
Nobody goes into that room but staff.
Alma's arms are crossed as she watches Paula get in an elevator. She glowers as she picks up a phone.
Let me speak with Dr. Morris.
Everett is frowning as he walks down a hallway. Paula's in Donald's office.
Donald, we got a problem here.
Dr. Spencer, I am chief of staff. And there is such a thing as hospital protocol.
And that's why I called you to come to this meeting, Everett, but you had already left your office.
I have been informed about isolating the Shaw boy. In this hospital, the head of infectious diseases and myself decide on isolation and quarantine.
We're not dealing with infectious disease here. I isolated Eric to keep his mother away from him. It struck me last night, the most logical person to be responsible for these attacks is Mrs. Shaw. Now, I've spent most of the night reading up on a rare psychiatric condition called Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Have you heard of it?
Of course I've heard of it.
There are cases where nurses have intentionally brought their patients near death in order to save their lives and become heroes. Munchausen by proxy is similar, but the abuser is the child's own parent, usually the mother's. These women cause illnesses in their kids in order to get the attention they crave from the hospital staff. I've been on the phone to a Dr. Richard Lowell. He's a Boston psychiatrist and an expert on this syndrome. He feels she fits the profile of these women.
Fits the profile? You're gonna need a lot more than fits the profile to bring this kind of accusation against a mother.
She's the daughter of a doctor. She has more than a layman's knowledge of medicine. She's with her son more than 20 hours a day, and the two times he was attacked, it was on separate floors.
What about Bobby Wilson? She's not his mother.
She could have done that to throw us off the track. According to the literature, these women are clever at concealing their crimes.
You are not a trained psychiatrist. Now, when you start tossing around rare psychiatric syndromes, don't you think you're wading in over your head?
Damn close to it. But I'm open to a better explanation. Do you have one?
I just don't think that we should go rushing into...
Rushing is exactly what we should be doing. What have we got to lose? We isolate Eric from his mother, and we hope he doesn't have another episode.
Well, I don't give a damn what your orders are. You get Dr. Spencer down here right now to tell me to my face that I can't see my son.
A security guard walks up behind her. She glances back, then turns back to the nurse.
Now!
As Everett watches, Paula approaches Monica.
Mrs. Emerson.
Why are you keeping me away from my son?
We're keeping everybody from your son.
I thought you told me he wasn't contagious.
No, he's not. But apparently everybody else is. It seems that he's susceptible to infection.
Are you saying that he has immune deficiency?
No. His system is quite capable of fighting off any pathogen. But I'd like to keep them from getting into him in the first place.
Nurses and doctors will be going in his room to care for him?
Yes, under sterile conditions.
Well, then I can do the same.
Mrs. Shaw, it'll be safer to limit the number of people in his room.
I am his mother. He'll be scared to death if he's separated from me. Now, look, you scrub me, you gown me, you do whatever you need to do to me, but I am staying in that room with my son.
This seems a reasonable request.
It is.
Nurse, would you show Mrs. Shaw to a dressing room?
Thank you, Doctor.
She glares at Paula as she leaves.
Any more argument from you and she would have signed the boy out of the hospital.
Everett goes to the elevators as Paula goes to the nurse's station.
I want nurses round the clock sitting in that room.
I don't have the staff.
We don't have a choice.
She glares at Donald.
Call an extra staff.
Every time Eric's IV is reinserted, I want the technician to write in the time, the date, and initials on the holding tape.
Donald leads her away.
Now, there's no way I can justify around-the-clock nursing care to the hospital board. That's a luxury we cannot afford.
It's something we need to do until we come up with a better solution.
Oh, I can't give you more than 2 days worth.
I can't.
I can't.
Look, did you see the way she manipulated her way into Eric's room? She knows hospital procedures. She knows medical procedures. She's got the nurses thinking she's Mother Teresa.
Well, it strikes me that she seems like she genuinely wants to be with her son.
She needs to be with him. Eric is the center of her life. Without him, she has no sense of purpose or safety.
And you have no doubts about this?
Oh, of course I have doubts. Morris is right. I am over my head. I don't want to make a mistake, but if I do, I want it to be in the boy's favor. Oh, for Pete's sake, Don, we operated on him. She already made us an accomplice by missing the diagnosis. Look at the tests the kid's been through. Every catheter, every needle was an assault I damn well don't want to repeat. Look, we need child welfare on that.
Whoa, wait a second. No. Wait, no, Paula, we bring in those people. We're definitely into legal hassles here.
So what do you want to do? Transfer? Hand the problem over to another hospital? Talk about legal hassles.
Wearing scrubs and a surgical mask, Monica goes into Eric's room.
All right, honey, Mommy. They're going to operate again?
No.
Why are you wearing that? I don't want them to operate.
Oh, honey, they're not going to operate. I'm only wearing this so that I don't get any germs on you. That's all.
Nora enters in scrubs.
Mom.
Oh, this is Nora, honey. You know Nora. I think she's going back to OR.
No, nobody's taking me back there, pal. We're just being careful.
Yeah, and you know Nora would never lie to you.
Do you want anything? A drink?
He nods.
I've got it.
It's going to be a long day.
Oh, are you staying in here?
Eric's getting the VIP treatment. Dr. Spencer ordered around-the-clock nursing.
Really?
Hospital's even paying for it.
That is so nice of her.
It's night as Paula leaves her office. She turns off a lamp and tosses a file onto a desk. She sees Monica is waiting for her.
Have I done something to offend you?
Why would you think that?
Monica stands.
I've always considered myself a good mother. I think other people view me that way. You know, I'd hoped that we would become friends. At least I thought that we might.
Mrs. Shaw, I don't understand.
There it is right there. You calling me Mrs. Shaw when I asked you to call me Monica. I was being so distant and formal.
Well, I'm sorry if that offends you. It's not personal.
Keeping me from my son isn't personal. Having a nurse in his room 24 hours a day when I'm there for him, that isn't personal.
It's for Eric's benefit.
Oh, I see. Well, then, if I don't see the benefit of it by tomorrow, I am signing him out of this hospital.
Paula watches her leave. The sun shines on a large office building. Wearing a red suit and carrying a briefcase, Paula steps off an elevator. She walks down a short hallway and goes into the Department of Social Services. Later.
So you're saying that this mother loves her son, but she's trying to kill him?
No. She's not trying to kill him. She's causing his illness to get attention for herself. And she assumes whatever happens to the boy, the doctors can handle.
Is she right?
She's been lucky so far.
Well, I have seen lots of cases of child abuse, but this seems so far-fetched.
This is as real and as deadly as anything you've seen. Look, I've got a kid in very serious condition, and the only way I can be assured he's getting adequate medical treatment is to keep his mother away from him. Now, will you do that?
Taking custody away from a mother is a huge step for us. We're always under a judicial microscope, so we have to make sure all our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed, and you have no eyewitness to this abuse.
That's impossible. She's not going to do anything while someone's in the room.
Have you talked to the police?
This is child abuse. They're not going to step in until your department requests it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll discuss it here and get back to you.
When?
In a day or two.
That boy doesn't have a day or two. If those private duty nurses aren't off the job by this afternoon, she's taking him out of the hospital. You've got to make a decision before her illness kills him.
Are you willing to testify before a judge?
Yes.
And this psychiatrist in Boston, a Dr. Lowell, we can count on him?
Yes.
A man in a suit walks up.
Meet Dr. Paula Spencer.
How do you do?
My pleasure.
This is Brett Curry, the department lawyer. Tell him your story.
Outside, construction workers slowly move some scaffolding. Monica is smiling as she gets off an elevator and stops at the nursing station.
Hi. Hey, we've got great cherry pie today. You might want to get down there before it's all gone.
She leaves, and Alma and Nora look at each other. They quickly follow her down the hallway. Monica takes a drink of her coffee and smiles. Her smile fades when she sees security guards, the woman from social services, Paula and Donald.
What is this? Mrs. Shaw, my name is Thelma Waters. I'm with the Department of Social Services. We're here to take your son, Eric, into the custody of the department.
No. No! Eric! Eric! Eric, it's Mommy! We're not going to take my son away! I'm his mother!
We're doing this for the boy's benefit.
She turns to Paula.
Bitch! You tell me this isn't personal! You tell me this isn't...
Guards pull her away as Amanda walks up.
My son is going to get my Eric! Eric! You see what kind of a mother you have? Eric! You're not going to take my son!
Paula goes to Thelma as she wipes coffee from her suit.
Doc, I hope your diagnosis is right. Or we're going to see hell in the courtroom.
Paula walks toward Amanda.
You okay?
I thought she was nice.
Some of the nurses and Paula stare at each other.
Hired John Panetta. He's a high-priced attorney who handles only high-profile cases. I assume he's taking this case on a contingency fee basis. Now, that means he feels pretty certain that he could win a lawsuit against us. So, let me lay out the scenario. The juvenile court judge is going to determine if social services gets custody of the boy. If that judge finds for the mother, I can assure you we'll be facing a lawsuit. The downside for this hospital is a major financial loss and a hostile public reaction.
What I can't understand is how we got ourselves into this mess.
Well, we didn't exactly plan it, Ben. It was a series of events that just took off.
Who authorized us going to social services?
I did.
We talked about it.
But it was a medical decision, and I made it.
You alone?
It was my decision. In my capacity as chair of the department.
Michael, how do we get out of this with the least damage?
Dr. Spencer withdraws her accusation against Miss Shaw. The boy's returned to his mother's custody without a hearing.
I won't do that. Mr. Trenton's given you the downside for the hospital if social services loses custody in the court. Well, the downside for Eric Shaw is death.
You feel certain of that?
Yes.
Everett?
This is Dr. Spencer's call, not mine. She's made all the decisions.
You agree with her?
No.
Donald takes a deep breath. A man is waiting outside an elevator.
Hi. Sorry, I had to wait.
You okay, Mom?
Sure.
There's a lot of gossip going around.
Well, a hospital's like high school. No difference. A lot of talk.
You know the talk's against you, right?
You know how that feels.
Yeah. God, I just can't believe she'd do something like this.
She's sick, Amanda. Something in her life, maybe her childhood, made her feel lonely and needy and terribly hungry for attention.
In Brad Curry's office.
According to the literature I've read on this syndrome, Eric's case isn't typical. I mean, these mothers have multiple children. Eric was an only child. The child abuse starts early on. Eric was 8 years old before he was hospitalized for this.
But the mother has a pretty good knowledge of medicine.
So do a lot of mothers. That doesn't mean they're mentally unstable. I've got a hearing this afternoon, and the judge is going to ask me the same questions that I'm asking you. Help me out here.
How do you know all this stuff about Monica and Eric?
What do you mean?
Where does it come from?
Her.
Well, didn't you say these women were pathological liars?
So maybe none of this background is true?
Paula looks at a paper.
She lived in Phoenix and Tucson before she moved here. We could try the hospitals there. See if Eric was ever admitted. Hi, Eric.
Nora and Dr. Jefferson are in Eric's room.
You feeling better? Hmm?
He nods.
Oh, you look better.
Thelma is on the phone.
Yes. The name is Eric Shaw. The mother is Monica. You sure? Nothing over the past 8 years. Would you double check? No, hold. I really need this information.
Record.
If you want some help with the judge, you can point out that without the mother here, the boy has recovered.
Good. I'll give it a shot. I'll talk to you after the hearing.
Thanks. Doctor, you better come.
She follows Nora to Eric's room. He's crying.
What is it, Eric?
I want my mom.
What did you say to him?
Nothing. He asked about her, and I told him that she couldn't come see him.
Thank you.
Nora leaves.
Oh, honey.
She sits next to the bed.
You were so sick that we thought it was best for your mom if she didn't come in all the time.
But I'm better now.
It'll take a little time before you're really all better. And she'll come as soon as she can, okay? Eric, do you ever remember being in another hospital? It would really help us to know if you've been in another hospital. Do you remember?
No.
No, you don't remember? Or no, you weren't in another hospital?
I wasn't.
You sure?
I wasn't.
Okay.
Later, Monica gets out of the back of a car, as does her attorney. They go into a courts building. Later, everyone stands as the judge takes her seat at the bench.
Well, gentlemen, I'm running late. Let's hear your arguments.
Monica is pacing outside the courtroom. She checks her watch. Paula answers a phone at the nursing station.
Hi, Brad.
The judge felt there was reason enough to call for a full hearing.
Great. When?
In 2 days. She doesn't want the boy's situation left unresolved.
But how could she feel that way? They have no evidence.
Eric's condition is improving, Monica. He's getting better.
Well, because I'm not with him? Well, that's ridiculous. He got better after the first fever and I was with him. Did you tell the judge that?
I did. This is just an initial hearing with no evidence presented. The judge will always err in favor of the child. That's the way it's done. Don't make too much of it. We have a strong case.
Paula's on the phone in her office.
Checked every hospital?
Every hospital and medical clinic in both cities. I even tried their children's services to see if they had anything in their files. Nothing.
Then Eric was telling the truth.
Don't get discouraged. It doesn't change the circumstances of this suit. It just means you're going to find out how good a lawyer Brad is. Keep your chin up. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Donald enters.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I heard the good news about the judge's ruling.
I doubt it's good enough for the board. I assume they're pressuring you to get rid of me.
It's nothing I can't handle.
Yet.
It's funny, isn't it? I dream about doing something great with this overage pile of bricks and underqualified staff, and it's all going down the tubes because of one neurotic woman.
Dare I assume you're not talking about me?
He smiles and shakes his head. Monica peers through a chain-link fence at the construction workers and at the hospital. Paula arrives home to find a police car parked out in front of her home. She pulls up behind it and stops. Two officers are in the house with Amanda.
Amanda?
What's wrong?
Mom? Mom, she's gone.
Who?
Cora, or whatever her name is. She's gone. She took everything. The TV, the stereo, my Walkman, all the jewelry, everything.
I checked her references. I called them.
Yeah, you called the number she gave you. She was a thief.
Amanda storms out. Later, Paula opens her jewelry box. She lifts up two trays to reveal a small velvet box. She opens the box to find it's empty. She wrinkles her forehead and starts to cry. With the box and the empty jewelry trays still in her hand, she takes a few steps and plops down at the end of her bed. She looks through the empty trays again, breathes in sharply, then begins to sob. Amanda's holding onto the couch as she cries as well. Paula comes down the stairs.
Replace all the things she took from you.
You can't replace my pearl earrings from Daddy.
No, I can't. Or any of the things he gave me.
Yeah, well, I didn't choose her to come into this house. You did.
I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
You know, maybe I could have helped. Maybe I could have seen the thief in her eyes, but you never even gave me that chance.
You had the chance when she arrived. You barely saw her face. You were in such a hurry to hide in your room.
Yeah, well, why not? The final decision was already made by you. It's always your decision. Hiring a housekeeper, moving to a new town, even with Dad's sickness. I wanted to spend more time with him. But you just decided to move him to the hospital.
Why wouldn't I move him there? Honey, he was dying.
You didn't even discuss it with anybody. You just went ahead and did it.
Your dad was too sick to be rational, and you were 12 years old. I was trying to prolong his life.
But you couldn't. Mom, he knew he was dying, and he tried to tell you he wanted to die. But you just wouldn't listen to him. You're the doctor, so that means you have all the answers, and you never listen to anybody.
I have to listen to everybody, Amanda, all the time. Then I have to make a decision. Right or wrong, I have to live with it.
Well, I guess you were wrong about Daddy.
Were you wrong in not visiting him?
You knew how I felt about hospitals.
Yes. And I accept that you did your best.
Amanda turns away and puts her head on her hands.
And I did my best. It's not something either one of us should feel guilty about, honey.
She doesn't turn and face her mom. With tears in her eyes, Paula walks away. Amanda pulls her long hair away from her face. It's nighttime. Joan enters Paula's office with two coffee mugs.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Joan sits in a chair in front of Paula's desk.
Stan was a great bear of a man who loved hugs. I never met anyone like him. In my parents' house, you were expected to keep your emotions to yourself. Lucky for me, he saw through all that. He
just powered his way into my life. And I was better for it. And Amanda, he just swallowed her up with love. And when he died, the fire went out of her life to go from that kind of warmth to me. I sure picked the right profession. Get awards for being cool and collected.
We'd be useless if it weren't.
Unfortunately, that doesn't work for parenting.
True. But you're not your parents. I mean, why repeat their mistakes? They could change.
I wish it were that easy.
It is. Once you get past the fear.
Paula stares at her in thought. Several hospital workers leave for the night. Someone in a nursing uniform walks with a tray. She passes a security guard reading a book in front of Eric's room. She opens the door and quietly goes inside. It's Monica. She smiles down at her sleeping son. Rubbing her eyes, little Becky steps into the hallway and sees Monica coming out of Eric's room. As the girl stares at her, Monica approaches with a tray and a smile. She squats in front of the girl.
Hi, hon. Hi. You don't see me, okay? I'm not here, promise? I think you're dreaming. Go to sleep. Go back to bed. That's good.
The next morning, reporters run to a car where Monica and her lawyer are getting out. They walk past the crush of reporters toward the courthouse. A taxi stops, then Thelma, Brad, and Paula get out.
Here's the doctor.
Inside the courthouse, Monica is sitting on a bench in the hallway. Paula, Thelma, and Brad walk in. They stop at a bench not too far away.
Look, I'm sorry you can't sit in the courtroom with us until you've testified. But it's the law.
Yes, I understand.
They glance over at Monica.
Are you going to be all right waiting out here?
I'll be fine.
Okay, well, we'll see you inside.
Paula nods, then Thelma and Brad go into the courtroom. Monica watches as Paula sits. As Paula stares at her, Monica smiles a little, then turns away. Soon after, Joan is on the stand.
Now, Dr. Case, you've already told us about the Shaw case, but there was another boy who became ill as a result of Streptococcus viridans and Candida albicans infection. Bobby Wilson.
Yes.
I assume that he is not the son of Monica Shaw.
Is that a question, Mr. Panetta?
No, Your Honor. Did you ever see Mrs. Shaw in any way abuse her son?
No.
Did you, on physical examination, notice any signs of physical abuse?
No.
Prior to Dr. Spencer's assertion that Eric was a victim of child abuse, had you ever entertain that diagnosis?
No.
Later.
So, Dr. Lowell, you never actually examined Eric Shaw or his mother, is that correct?
I was in Boston, sir.
So, you made the diagnosis over the phone?
Well, I simply corroborated Dr. Spencer's evaluation of Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
And you told her that the diagnosis would fit the Shaw case?
Absolutely. Barring any other explanation for the boy's condition, the syndrome definitely had to be considered.
Well, let's consider it then.
His assistant hands him a stack of papers.
I have here a copy of your clinical and pathological study of the syndrome. In all your cases, the mothers had multiple children. Eric Shaw is
an only child.
All of your mothers abused their children from early childhood, some from infancy. Eric Shaw is 8 years old.
Eric is having a seizure. Dr. Jefferson enters the room.
3 milligrams of Valium.
In the courtroom.
Even Dr. Lowell, the expert, says the pattern is not typical of Munchausen syndrome by proxy. So, where does this diagnosis come from? Is it because you can find no other explanation for what was happening?
No.
Well, is it diagnosis by default?
No.
Is Munchausen syndrome by proxy simply a proxy for your inability to solve this problem?
Your Honor.
There's no jury, Mr. Panetta. We can do without the rhetoric.
Panetta's assistant walks in with a note.
The fact is that since Mrs. Shaw has had no contact with Eric, he's recovered.
He also recovered from his first bout with the fever, and she was there.
But he got sick again.
He reads the note.
And again.
Soon after.
How will this affect your case, Mrs. Shaw?
Mrs. Shaw, all I know is my son is sick, and he needs me. I cannot believe in this country a son can be torn from his mother by some spiteful woman. It's just not right.
Mrs. Shaw, wait a minute.
Paula is staring out of her office window. Donald enters.
You okay?
My daughter accused me of thinking I had all the answers and not listening to anybody else's opinions. Pretty astute assessment.
No chance his mother could have gotten to him.
Oh. With around-the-clock security guards, I can't believe what I put that woman through. And the thing I keep asking myself is, was it personal? Was I being a doctor? Or was I being a mother who hasn't done such a terrific job with her own kid? Am I looking at this woman who could be elected mother of the century and thinking, no, this is too good to be? There's got to be a flaw here. Somewhere.
She gives him an envelope.
What's this?
My resignation.
Paula.
I can tough it out when I'm right, not when I'm wrong. My mistakes already cost too much. I know you've been fighting for me, and I thank you for it. But I don't want it costing your job.
As a nurse carries trays, Amanda and Becky walk behind the tray of stuffed animals and toys. They stop and look into Eric's room. He's sleeping.
Eric's real sick.
No.
They keep walking.
He needs mommy to come and be with him. He misses her.
I know, but she can't come visit right now.
Last night she could.
Amanda frowns and stops. She stares at the little girl.
Becky, did you see Eric's mommy last night?
She nods.
Are you sure?
She nods again.
I saw her. She came out of Eric's room and said to me that she wasn't here, but she was here.
If she entered that room, she violated a restraining order.
If she entered that room. You're telling me the boy's IV tape wasn't tampered with.
She could have used a syringe to inject directly into the tubing.
The guard said he didn't get a good enough look to ID her. So we're left with Becky, a 6-year-old who says she saw something in the middle of the night.
I believe her.
And she's probably right. She saw Monica Shaw come out of Eric's room, but it's her word against some adults.
So where do we stand on this?
I'll call the girl as a witness and hope she plants some doubts in the judge's head.
But you're not optimistic.
We're going to win or lose on the judge accepting the Munchausen diagnosis. And so far, Panetta's done a pretty good job of disputing it.
Becky and Amanda are waiting as Paula comes out of an office.
You ready to go back to your room now, sweetie?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'll take her.
Thanks, hon. For everything.
She takes Amanda by the chin and gives her a kiss.
She kissed you.
Yeah, she did.
Amanda smiles to herself.
Ready? Let's go.
It's nighttime at the hospital. Dr. Jefferson is walking down a hallway.
Hi.
He goes into Eric's room where Paula is watching the sleeping boy.
Aren't you going home?
Yeah.
She checks her watch as he goes to look at some of Eric's drawings on the wall.
I think this kid has talent.
Yeah. I hope he lives long enough to prove it.
Well, this must be the hospital. And this man with a knife is probably Dr. Warner. This beautiful lady is our Alma. This I haven't figured out.
The Space Needle.
This must be the board. This might be you. The ocean.
Wait a minute. How is it an 8-year-old boy who grew up in Phoenix and Tucson knows about the Space Needle?
A trip to Seattle?
Could be. But maybe, just maybe he lived there.
Yes, the name is Shaw. Son Eric and Mother Monica. No, I don't know what part of Seattle.
Later, Brad and Paula are walking through the courthouse.
Excuse me, doctor.
Hi, this isn't going to help you, Mrs. Shaw.
Do you have any idea what it's like to know that your child is deathly ill and not be allowed to comfort him? Do you sleep in the
night? Monica, doctor? Come on now.
At her office, Thelma hurries to the phone.
Thelma Waters? Yes. From Seattle, yeah. I'll accept the charges. Hi, got anything?
Mrs. Shaw, your father was a physician, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a wonderful man. He was loved and respected by everyone.
So he spent a great deal of time with you.
Well, as often as possible. He was a very busy man.
Too busy for his only daughter?
No.
But didn't you tell Dr. Spencer the only time he had for you was when you were ill?
No, I never said that.
Are you saying that Dr. Spencer's a lie?
No. What I'm saying is that possibly she misinterpreted. Yes, I spent a lot of time with my father. Most times I was well, and sometimes I was ill.
I see.
Thelma enters the courtroom.
Bingo.
So you spent time with your physician father. I assumed you learned something about medicine.
A little.
You learned how to, let's say, adjust the flow on an IV?
Yes. It's hardly complicated. It's just measuring the drops per minute.
Thelma shows Brad her notes on a notepad.
Are you finished with this witness, Mr. Curry?
No, Your Honor. Can I have just a minute, please?
All right.
Is this for real?
You better believe it.
Brad glances back at Paula, then looks at Monica. He thinks for a moment, then removes his glasses.
Mrs. Shaw, have you ever lived in Phoenix?
No.
How about Tucson? You ever lived there?
No.
Then why did you tell Dr. Jefferson that you lived in those cities?
I didn't.
It's part of Barrett's medical record. I mean, the information came from you.
I never said that we lived in those cities.
So Dr. Jefferson's a liar?
I wouldn't say that.
What would you say?
I would say that maybe this is just another example of the shoddy work done in that hospital and why I'm sitting here in this courtroom today.
Did you ever live in Seattle?
No.
You never lived in Seattle?
I know where I've lived.
Suppose I was to tell you that a woman named Monica Shaw had the same social security number as you did live in Seattle.
I'd say you were mistaken.
Suppose I was to tell you that that woman had a son named Eric, born June 7th, 1986, the same date you gave Dr. Jefferson as your son's birthday.
Your Honor, I object to this line of questioning.
I have never lived in Seattle. Maybe someone used my name and my social security number.
I assume you can verify this information, Mr. Curry.
Yes, I can, Your Honor. Now, according to the Seattle Children's Hospital records, between the years of 1989 and 1994, Eric Shaw was admitted through emergency 26 times for unexplained abdominal cramps. The diagnosis that they finally came up with was laxative abuse. Mrs. Shaw, were you dosing Eric with laxative to put him in a hospital?
No! I would never do something like that.
Your Honor, I object. He's expecting answers to hypothetical questions.
This is a hearing, Mr. Panetta, not a trial. I'm going to allow him to continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mrs. Shaw, do you recall that the Seattle Children's Protective Services were brought in to investigate?
I never lived in Seattle.
Do you recall that they suggested psychiatric evaluation for you?
Your Honor, he's mistaking me with someone else.
Just answer the questions, Mrs. Shaw.
According to their notes, you left town without a forwarding address a month before Eric was admitted to this hospital. Do you deny that?
Yes, I deny that. Yes.
Mrs. Shaw, I must emphasize that you are testifying under oath.
I am telling the truth. I was taught never to lie.
Mrs. Shaw, are you a widow?
I'm divorced.
But you told the hospital you were a widow.
Eric's father wasn't there for him while we were married, and he's chosen not to see him in the last 5 years since our divorce. I thought it would be easier for my son if he thought his father was dead.
But you don't lie,
Mrs. Shaw. It's like he was dead. I just stretched the truth in order to save my son's feelings.
Brad stands still for a moment, then takes a note from Thelma.
Mrs. Shaw, is your maiden name Ellis?
Her eyes dart around the room.
Mrs. Shaw, was your maiden name Ellis?
Yes.
From Boise, Idaho? From Boise, Idaho.
Your Honor, I don't understand why I'm having to answer these questions. All I'd like to do is get my son and go home.
Answer the question, Mrs. Shaw.
Are you from Boise, Idaho?
Yes.
Her eyes roll back and she squirms.
Your Honor, 12 years ago, in Boise, a woman named Monica Ellis had a child out of wedlock. That child was repeatedly admitted to the hospital with severe abdominal pains. The diagnosis they came up with was laxative abuse.
Monica is crying.
Your child died, Mrs. Shaw, at the age of 18 months due to a ruptured intestine.
No! I love Billy! I love Billy! I didn't do anything to Billy. God knows it. Please, Your Honor, I'm a good mother. I'm not a good mother, but I am. Please, Your Honor, don't take my son away from me. Don't take this son from me. I am a good mother. If everybody's against me, I don't understand. I just want to go.
Paula purses her lips and shakes her head.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Eric is sleeping peacefully in a hospital bed. Paula covers him with a blanket as Donald walks in.
Is he okay?
Physically. I don't know about the other scars.
Have they been able to contact his father?
Social services is looking for him. But even if they find him, he walked away from this kid years ago. I doubt if it'd be a good risk for placing Eric.
She looks at the boy again, then stands next to Donald.
Were there any other relatives?
A maternal grandmother. She's on her way to pick him up now.
Look, I know you don't feel great about the outcome, but whatever happens from here, you saved this kid's life, and you have to feel good about that.
Sure.
He takes something out of his breast pocket and gives it to her. She looks at it, then looks at him.
Never received and never acknowledged.
He tears up her resignation and she smiles.
Thanks.
He rubs her back and leaves. That night she arrives home. She stops, listens, then goes into the kitchen where Amanda is working.
Hi.
Hi.
Jazz?
Yeah, this boy Pete lent it to me. Go on.
Cool.
Paula shakes her head as she smiles.
You know your dad loved jazz.
You know what I think? I think he'd really like this tape.
I think you're right.
Amanda looks down with a frown.
You know I love you.
Amanda looks up and a smile creeps across her face.
Yeah. I like to hear it, though.
Paula nods.
Me too.
I love you, Mom.
I'm going to change.
Okay.
Paula smiles. Narrative script written and narrated by Susan Crane for the Emmy Award-winning Narrative Television Network. Special thanks to the U.S. Department of Education.